This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
We got more guests coming up. In just a little bit, we'll talk to Jeremy Markovich about a company that sponsors a lot of highways in North Carolina. It's one of those that, like, your eyes didn't really pay attention to it, and now you're going to be seeing it. If you're on I-40, tune in about 10 minutes, and we're going to answer one of the mysteries that you might need solved while you're driving. We've even got people reaching out to us, Dennis Cox. We'll be placing our bets at, I believe it's 145-ish. We do that. We have somebody already right now. They're like, I'm on an Amtrak train to Baltimore for the Camden Yards 30th anniversary. There's a casino where I'm going. I want to play some units. What's my play for Pirates at O's Friday and Saturday night? Do we take requests?
Yeah, we'll place your some bets? Requests. All Why not?
Well, partly because I'd like to place bets.
Also, props for using the Amtrak.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeremy Markovich, our guest that's going to join us in about 10 minutes, was on an Amtrak today from Greensboro to Durham.
See?
Everybody's just training it. Everybody associated with this show is training it anyway. They're doing it right. Let me tell you about somebody that was doing it wrong. And if you follow me on Twitter at DHPIV, you saw me make a little bit of noise on this. I try not to be on my phone too much on vacation. It's always a little bit of a dilemma because you want your camera with you to capture great moments, right? But your camera is tied to everything else that's in your phone. Like your texts and the Slack threads and the social medias and everything else. And you're like, I would like to put this down, but actually have access to a camera for when the, you know, little niece I'm with on the beach does something cute. So I don't know. I maybe need to just buy a camera just to use for vacations so I don't have to use my phone. But I'm at a North Carolina beach week, which, by the way, there should be a book. It's like a sociological study of the North Carolina Family Beach Week. You know the time I'm talking about. It's kind of cool because the North Carolina Beach Week, some vacations are, for lack of a better term, like elitist. They like class people out. Like you can go to Europe, and some people can go to Europe more expensive than other people, right? But like by virtue of going to Europe, you got to have some money just to get there, right? So not everybody's going to Europe, and certainly not everybody's going every year, right? The great thing about the North Carolina beach vacation is it kind of transcends class. If you've got the money to rent or buy a huge house on the ocean with a swimming pool and a hot tub and 30 bedrooms, like you can do it that style. If all you can afford is a hotel room at the beach or a camper, and I'm not knocking those things either. Like basically there's just a lot of different ways to do the beach. You can do it on the low end, or you can do it luxury, like however you want to do the beach. And every family in North Carolina, not everyone, but it's become a thing where like, it's been a thing where you go to the beach and oftentimes you rent the same beach house every year. And it starts to feel a little bit like your beach house, right? And you go back and you're there. Oh, we're always there the week after the 4th of July or the last week in June or the first week in August or whatever it is. You're at the beach week. And there's a lot of people do beach weeks differently. Some people it's like sit on the beach all day, every day. Some people it's like activities. You start at your beach house and you move around the beach, checking things out from there. There's a lot of different ways to do the beach week. So I don't have a lot of hard and fast rules about how you should do your beach week. Should you go out to eat and eat dinner? Should you cook meals in? Should it be a combo? Should you do only seafood at the beach? Mm-hmm. Should you be on the south side? Should you be on the boat? Should you be sitting on the beach? These are all choices that you have. However, in order to exist as a society, a civilized beach vacationing state, we do have some rules that help us organize in the chaos, right? And I believe that chief among these rules, number one, actually, well, whatever. There's a lot of things that could be number one, but because I'm doing this radio segment, number one is you do not set up your beach set up, and yes, I know I just used set up as a verb and a noun there. I don't know how else to do it. You do not put your beach set up in front of another beach set up. What constitutes in front, right? Drawing a perpendicular line to you and the ocean, like a straight line right at you in the ocean. Nobody should set up in there. Now, let me be clear on a couple things. First of all, no one owns the beach. That should probably be rule number one. Like, people who own houses on the beach do not own the beach in front of their house, right? Everything's like fair game. This is true in the setup rule, too. Like, if I've got my beach set up, that is not to say that no one can cross in front of me, right?
Okay.
Kids can play. People can sit their chair. You know, some people like to, you sit for a little while with your feet in the surf, like down there. People can go down there and sit in the surf. Walkers can walk. Dogs can walk. Kids can build sandcastles in front of me. Like, there's nothing off limits about the area in front of me. But you just do not set up. A setup constitutes what? Like, at least three chairs and shade of some sort. Mm-hmm. Probably a cooler, maybe a speaker.
Shibumi. Like
a tent, a shibumi, an umbrella even, I think, constitutes a setup. So I had this happen to me. I'm down at the beach. I will admit, the shibumis make it a little tricky because you've got to face your shibumi into the wind. So oftentimes your shibumi may look like it's akin to a golf hole where the tee boxes are pointed in one direction, but you might actually be aiming like a little bit different. Like you're like, I'm going to try and cut the corner here. So I'm not hitting straight out of the tee box.
Sure.
I'm hitting off to the left. So I've got my shibumi facing a little bit to the right, but I myself am sitting under the shibumi facing the water because I want to look at the water, right? So I had a group come and just set up four chairs and an umbrella that's sprung up, I'm talking like 15 yards in front of me and directly in front. And so I threw out a picture and I was like, this is unacceptable North Carolina beach behavior. And there are a lot of opinions on it. Now, a couple things. I describe beach setup laterally, side to side. We use urinal rules, okay? Now, I realize that females may not have the same urinal experience because I realize you don't have the same bathroom setup as the males do. But we've got urinals where you got toilets hanging on the wall. There might be, let's say there's 10 of them, right? If there's only three people using the urinals at the same time and there's 10 urinals, there's no reason for any of those dudes to be standing shoulder to shoulder. So the same applies to the beach. When space allows, you give a lot of space, like at least 15 or 20 yards from the setup to the left or right of you. Now, as it gets more crowded, maybe it's 2 o'clock, it's a perfect day, it's not too hot. That hadn't happened in a while. It's been very hot. So, yes, you do get a little bit tighter. But in that instance, we employ what I like to call the stagger, okay? We're like, one group can be a little bit forward, one group can be a little bit back. It doesn't feel like you're right next to each other, and nobody's blocking anybody's view or path to the ocean. So there were just some folks, I don't know if they were from Ohio or Pennsylvania or wherever they were from, but they were down here and they set up directly in front of me. Now, to be fair, before they even got through with their setup, some people came up and were like, dude, we're set up right in front of those other people. Let's move over here into a stagger position. And that's exactly what they did. And their tent was a little bit off to the left of me. But one dude, the first guy that went down there to set up, almost as if to prove his point, was like, no, I'm staying here with my umbrella. So then he was separate from his group and in front of me, like clearly just to try and irk me, right? The best part was the next couple days, so we're coming off the public beach access, right? Mm-hmm. They're coming off like a house. They keep trying to creep over further to the public beach access to prevent us from having space to like set up. So we're having to go around them to the left. And then one day they tried to set up, and just a lot of people came for the public beach access and were just right on top of them. It was like, that's what you get for trying to move closer to the beach access to shut people off from being to the right of you. Now you get in the middle of everybody, including like some annoying kids. So observe the rules. Remember, when impossible, laterally, we use urinal rules where you try and give as much space as possible. But when it gets crowded, yes, you might have to be shoulder to shoulder with somebody. Never directly in front. And when at all possible, stagger. One a little bit in front, one a little bit behind, so that you're never directly beside or directly in front of everybody. That's how a beach setup should be. In fact, there was, you know, some people go Friday to Friday, Saturday to Saturday, Sunday to Sunday, like you might be different. So we were Sunday to Sunday. So there was like different people were there Saturday. And even though these people weren't from North Carolina, They clearly had the stagger system down. They knew what was going on.
Now, there is an exception I would add to this rule. If someone sets up really far back from the shoreline,
okay, that's fair.
Then there's the exception to that.
That's fair, but you do have to be careful because some people are setting up on the shoreline and then the tide goes out. So it may look like they're a decent distance for the ocean, but they started. So, yes. But, yeah, if you're way back, I get it. And some people hit me up and they're like, oh, and at the Delaware beaches, you can't do that. It's true. At Myrtle Beach, you never get away with that. And I'm like, fine. I don't know the rules at Delaware. I don't know the rules at Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, we're not talking Rehoboth.
This is North Carolina, okay? And at Emerald Isle, in a civilized society, we stagger at the beach.
Yes.
All right? So if you're driving right now to the beach, think about that. Plan. Leave room to stagger. Don't set up in front of somebody else.
Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they don't are familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that'll help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
Welcome back to the Adam Gold Show. As you know, we are statewide here in North Carolina, heard on up in the mountains, heard down at the coast, and we like to tell the stories of North Carolina. One of North Carolina's best storytellers is Jeremy Markovich. He does his thing at the North Carolina Rabbit Hole. You should check it out now. Subscribe to it. Support it if you can. You can always follow him on Twitter at Deftly Inane. I believe he's that on TikTok as well. But just if you Google the NC Rabbit Hole, you'll find what you need to be following and check him out. He has several cool stories, always ties with to the state of North Carolina. But first, he went international. Literally, he himself was in another country. He saw the Pope. Tell me what it was like seeing the Pope. You didn't quite meet him, but you came closer than most of us ever will come to the Pope, right?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, like, I literally, and I'm not making this up, like, accidentally ran into the Pope, if there is such a thing.
Sure.
So the backstory is my wife and I took a 2 years delayed 40th anniversary slash our 40th birthday slash 10th anniversary trip to Quebec City in Montreal, and we booked the actual trip back in April. The Pope himself didn't book his trip to Quebec City until a month later.
He heard you were going to be there.
He was like, well, I got to go if Jeremy's going to be there. That's obviously why. So we showed up, and we knew that he was going to be there, but we were like, well, there's no like big public event we're going to go see him. We're going to be aware of it. But like, you know, we're not really making any specific plans to see the Pope. And on our last night there, we were going out to eat. We walked to our restaurant. It was lovely. We were walking back, and there were a bunch of barricades up, and, like, literally we were being blocked by the Pope. So we had no choice but to stand there and watch the Pope go by in this Pope-mobile. And, I mean, we were within, like, I don't know, like 30 feet or something like that of the Pope, and he stopped to kiss a baby, and he was gone. But, I mean, like, so we had a chance encounter with the pontifex himself.
It was pretty cool, and you got some good shots. I have to say, it was cool. I feel like a strange connection to you, even though we've never met, partly just because I have a great connection to the state of North Carolina, just because I was lucky enough to be born here. You actually go out and you actually earned your connection to the state by seeing it, you know, all over, hitting every state park, writing all about it. So you've done a lot more than I have here. But I feel this strange connection to you, including I had a similar brief encounter with the Pope when he was in D.C. The last time. I was up there to visit my niece who was in school at George Washington, and then I met her. I was she was going to class, and I was going to a day Nats game, and I'm driving, and like you said, I sort of ran into a barrier that I didn't expect to be there, and I was like, well, I don't even see anything going on. And I think this was him, like, literally getting out of town. I think he was headed towards the airport. But sure enough, 2 minutes later, after there's, like, this slight traffic jam, me and a couple other cars at a barricade, we're like, what is it? about 15 Fiats go screaming by, and we're told that the Pope is in one of them. So I think he was out of town. But we stood there, and you sort of looked in one. You're like, I think that was him. I even think there were a couple like fake Popes stuffed into other Fiats just to make it harder. So
it's funny because like when we were there, we saw him like we saw video footage of him like leaving the airport, and it's like 30 gigantic black SUVs, and in the middle of it is a tiny white Fiat.
Yeah,
like so like. That's the Pope car.
Yeah. I think it was that same thing, but I think there were like three Fiats when I saw it. It was like, oh, which one? They're playing the shell game. Which one has the Pope? Yeah. You should try and follow
it. The Pope, yeah.
There we go. All right. Back to some stories that have some closer connections to North Carolina. And let's start with the one that you wrote about today. And that is, it was on my mind because I recently went to the beach. I came back from the beach. And if you come back from Wilmington on 40, you definitely see this. And I'll let you tell how far it extends. But back in the day, I also remember coming back on 70, billboards for Johnson Lexus or Johnson Automotive. And now they actually have, looks like they're almost state-sponsored because every mile along the highway is Johnson Automotive-sponsored highway. How did this come to be, Jeremy?
Well, it's funny because, like, the reaction to this morning was being like, oh, yeah, I'm aware of these signs, but, like, I literally did not know, like myself, that everyone for every mile on I-40 between Mebane and Wilmington is a Johnson something sign. It's a Johnson Lexus or Subaru or whatnot. And so like people are aware of it, but don't realize like how many of them there are. And like, so what I did was like the last time my mother-in-law drove back from the beach, I was like, hey, you, I want you to count. I want you to figure out how many there are. You tell me. And she was like, oh my God, every single one. She just was like, so it's like this weird parlor trick, like that you can kind of do like, hey, like if you see a little puffy cloud in the sky, you're like, I'm going to point at that cloud and make it go away. You know, like it's the same deal. Like, hey, I'm going to make all of these signs for the same company for 200 something miles. But what they did was, like you were saying, you know, back in the day, they had 10 billboards in a row on the way between like Havelock and New Bern on Highway 70. But billboards are actually harder to come by than you might think. Like people are very anti-billboard. Like there are fewer of them in Raleigh. There's none in Cary. And like there's some stretches of interstate now where there's just none at all around Raleigh. And so they were like, they don't do TV ads anymore. And their marketing director was like, well, how can we actually like get our name out there in a way that like, you know, impressions.
People
like,
will see it.
People will see it. And so they're like, well, what's this sponsor a highway thing? And, they went all in on it. I mean, they this is like more than like $2 million a year, to sponsor all of I-40 between Mebane and the coast, and also just all kinds of different highways. And so basically, anytime a new stretch of highway opens in eastern North Carolina, they just jump on it and try to sponsor the entire thing.
Interesting. All right, is this both sides of the highway going east and west? They got. I mean, I guess if you sponsor 1 mile, you're sponsoring both sides. But are the signs on both sides, I guess is my question?
I believe so. I mean, okay. So and the whole thing, too, is like, so, you know, I mean, I think people have seen adopt a highway.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the significance and clarify the difference between adopting a highway and sponsoring a highway.
So adopt a highway is like, hey, Hayes, you and I, we feel civically minded and we would like to go out there and get rid of the litter on a stretch of highway. You and I can adopt a highway, and basically 4 times a year, the state will give us gloves, bags, vests, and they'll say, knock yourself out, pick up the highway, pick up the trash, the litter that's on the side of the highway. That's like a small thing.
Okay.
Sponsor highway is like, hey, I'm a company, and I'm going to hire this contractor to go out there and do it for me. And so literally, like, Johnson Automotive employees are not responsible for, like, 400 whatever miles of interstate litter.
Sure.
But they are by far, like by a magnitude of at least, like, you know, 2 or 3 times the largest sponsor a highway sponsor in the country. So like I think like second, like they have 1,100 and some signs, you know, across North Carolina. I think maybe the only other one that comes close to that is like 300 or 400 signs somewhere else. So they get after it.
Yeah, this is going to be like the, as you were mentioning, like the arrow in the middle of the FedEx logo that if you don't know it's there, you don't see it because it's right there in between the E and the X. But then once told about it, you never stop saying, I know that it's there, but I'm saying now people driving down the highway.
That.
Wait, you didn't know about the arrow and the E and the X?
No.
Oh, well, now you're never not going to see it. Every time you look at a FedEx logo, right there between the E and the X, there's an arrow pointing forward, and that's like done by FedEx. And this is, people are driving on the highway listening to us right now, Jeremy, and they're like, wait a minute. I see the sign on 40. I mean, there's the 10,000 people on 40 right now, and at least three quarters of them are listening to this darn show. So, like, people are seeing it for the first time, and now they're just not going to be able to stop seeing it as they're driving by. And now I can't wait for you to see a FedEx truck and have your mind absolutely blown. This is fantastic. Jeremy Markovich joining us from the North Carolina rabbit hole. They're not doing anything nefarious here, right? As you said, they're not claiming that they're cleaning it up. They pay for somebody to do it, and they pay good money that presumably goes to the state and other good causes. So, like, as a taxpayer, I should be, like, mostly happy about this, right? They are paying the set price by the state to have their name on the highways, and that way the highways are a little bit cleaner. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, it costs about $19 million a year to pick up trash across North Carolina. And so anything that the state can kind of defer and not have to pick up is significant. And the funny thing is, like, they don't even actually handle the money at all. So, like, the dealership just pays the contractor, and the contractor does it. So it kind of takes care of itself. The funny thing is, again, people will call Johnson Automotive, and, like, if they ever get complaints about it, one's like, I can't believe you all are just like that's overkill, dude. Like, that's too much.
Right.
Like, you got every sign. Like, come on. Like, we get it. You're a dealership. You sell cars. Okay. And then, but what ends up happening is then people will call. There will be like, or they'll be like, hey, you sponsored a highway, but I saw like some trash out there. Like, what the heck, man? Like, and usually they say, well, hey, like, we'll get somebody, but we'll call, we'll get somebody out there. We'll take care of it. Or they're like, yeah, when you sponsor, we actually pick up the litter. Like, that's kind of what we're responsible for. And people are like, oh, cool. Never mind. That's cool.
Yeah.
It does. That's usually the reaction to it. So.
It feels like if they are legitimately, to use a bad pun, like taking care of their side of the street, you know, then I don't see why anybody should have a problem with it. Go out. If you would like to, go out there and sponsor your own highway, although apparently highway I-40 is spoken for.
I will say, though, I was going to say, DOT, by the way, told me that, like, hey, if you want to pick up trash, they will send you gloves, like, that. They will send you everything. They want you to do this.
So, sure.
Like, just call up the DOT. They'll give you the stuff, and you can do it, and they'll be very, very happy that you did.
We could always use more trash being picked up. All right, the other story also involving highways, coincidentally. This time the North Carolina Highway Patrol. A hat showed up in a picture from Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade filming with director Steven Spielberg wearing an odd and very, very, very rare North Carolina Highway Patrol hat. First of all, how did you even get pushed down this rabbit hole? And then we'll talk about how the mystery was solved.
So, like, this is one of these things where, like, this is nowhere near the most important thing that is happening or, like, the biggest mystery or anything like that. It was just somebody had sent me a picture, and they're like, huh, here's a picture of Spielberg directing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in, like, 1988. Here he is on set. Why is he wearing a Highway Patrol hat? And I was like, huh, I don't know. That's weird. And so, I had some theories, but I decided, well, let me just see if I can actually, like, figure this out. And so what I did was, the first thing, you had to figure out where the picture's from. It's from Spain, on set. If you watch the movie, it is the part where, like, they go to the Republic of, I think, Hete.
Okay.
And, you know, the guy is like, hey, we're going to give you tanks and whatever. And he goes out and he, like, takes over the tank and whatever. Like, that's the part of the movie that they were shooting. So he's wearing this hat around. That's where it was from. And then basically from there, I asked, like, you know, some people who are, like, Indiana Jones super fans, or, like, some Facebook. There's, like, a Facebook group of people who, like, share behind-the-scenes pictures.
Of course.
And they were all very, like, fascinated by this hat because, like Steven Spielberg, if you've ever seen pictures of him, he just wears, like, these large, like, trucker kind of, like, dad hats. Like, they're just – they're not great hats. Like, they're not expensive hats.
Right.
So he's kind of known for his hats, but they had not seen this one. They were like, this is a rare hat. And when I contacted the Highway Patrol, they're like, you know, like, we never made this hat in yellow. Like, we have, like, we have these black hats with this logo on it. We don't know what this is. And So from there, I think the Highway Patrol got fascinated with it, and they started trying to figure out where this hat came from. And it turns out it was a guy who was a state patrol guy who helped, like, do traffic control for the Color Purple. Color Purple, if you remember, it's Danny Glover, Oprah Winfrey, Whoopi Goldberg movie, shot actually in Anson and Union County. It's down near, like, Wadesboro,
sure.
Monroe, that area. And so the Highway Patrol helps do, you know, like, it's a period piece. It's from the early 1900s. You don't want, like a Mazda driving by trying to, like, you know, like, do that. So, like, they would close the roads and do traffic control and that sort of thing. And so every day they would have lunch with the crew if you were on duty on the detail. And Spielberg would come over and he would talk with the Highway Patrol guys. And one of them was like, he seems like a nice dude. I really like this guy. Like, I want him to have something to remember us by. Couldn't get an official Highway Patrol hat. So he sends his wife out to go buy some random hat. She chose yellow, buys the yellow hat, goes and has his mother-in-law stitch on a patch that he cut off of an old uniform. He makes the hat, he gives it to Spielberg. Spielberg's like, oh, wow, cool. Wears it, you know, around the set. And then 3 years later, just like pops it on his head and he's wearing around North Africa. So like literally that is the story of a hat that took like a very long time to track down. But obviously like this little gesture meant so much to him that he hung onto a hat for 3 years and wore it on arguably one of the biggest movies of like the late 80s.
Yeah, and a great story behind it. My question for you, and you got to go read these to check them out. Read, subscribe to the North Carolina Rabbit Hole. There are so many interesting, cool stories, and part of it is seeing how Jeremy tracks them down. So my question for you is, you're going through this, you talk to highway patrol people, you feel like you're getting closer to the answer. How cool is it when you're either on the phone, or I believe it's on the phone, or corresponding through email with a person, and you're saying, so I'm trying to find out about this hat, which we now know is a one-of-one hat. It was specially made for Steven Spielberg. How cool is it when you're talking to a person, and they say, oh, I got the answer. I made that hat. Like, is that just a cool moment? I'm not a reporter like you, but I feel like that would be pretty top in, other than seeing the world, you know, retweet your Mick Jagger takes or whatever it is, like being in that moment and there's no audience, it's just you. Like, that's gotta be one of the cooler feelings.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a reporter, if you're a writer, if you're like trying to track down stuff, like your batting average isn't always that high. Like, you know, maybe of all the things these people we want you to look into, most of them, like half of them are like Googleable. Like, hey, why is this the way this is? And you like pop it into Google and you're like, well, here's the answer. Like, you know,
easy.
You just had to Google it. And then some of them are like so impossibly hard, but also very low stakes that you're just like, I don't even know if anybody would ever like know about this, care, like whatever, you know, like, and so like, obviously it was meaningful to somebody. Like, it was meaningful to Steven Spielberg in the fact that, like, he specifically wore that hat. Like, he seems fairly discerning in, like, what hats he wears. So it means something to somebody. But, like, how would you even know who gave a hat to somebody 34 years ago? And every once in a while, if it, like, by magic, like, you talk to the guy, and the guy is like, yeah, I don't even know how you found me. This is incredible. And I will say that, like, it's really cool. It's very satisfying to like close out something like that. But also like, this was one where I had a lot of help, like the Highway Patrol, like Indiana Jones super fans, like biographers of Spielberg. Like, I just cast a giant wide net. And it was one of those things that everybody was like a little bit curious on and happy to help. And it actually somehow worked out. We figured this out. So
very cool. Jeremy Markovich, follow him on Twitter at Definitely Inane. You can find out things like why Johnson Automotive owns I-40, not really, but sponsors it. You can find out why Steven Spielberg was wearing a Highway Patrol hat and many, many, many other cool things. Check him out. Follow his TikTok. He explains them well in videos, and it's just a great follow. We always appreciate the time. Keep up the great work, my man, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Sorry, I was just looking at the videos online of you getting mad about me talking about your comic books, Dennis Cox.
Oh, the disrespect that you threw towards me?
That is Jeremy Markovich. If you have not checked out the North Carolina Rabbit Hole, do so. I feel like this is a backhanded compliment. If you go to the North Carolina Rabbit Hole and the first thing you read doesn't grab you, that's fine. But he's going to write one that you're like, oh my gosh, this is the cool, this is like what I wanted to know more than anything in the world, right? He answers questions. Or if you have questions, you're like, why is this always this way? Jeremy Markovich is the guy that gets to the bottom of it. Although it is funny, he talked about having low stakes, right? Like, it's not like he needs this answer to actually help someone out. It's just kind of like trivia, right? But now he's become this, you know, if people take on different roles in, you know, in on Twitter. Like, if anything of a certain topic comes up, people are like, oh, this guy, he always talks about it, you know. You know, there's certain people that's like the Star Wars guy or the the whatever. You're Eastern North Carolina person. My good friend Weather Moose, if we ever have a weather question, it's like, oh, hit up the Weather Moose. He'll tell you. Or anything Johnson County related. It's like, hit up him. Now people are like, when something random or unexplained happens in North Carolina, people are just like, Markovich, get on that. So check out the North Carolina rabbit hole. Pitch him your mysteries and see if he can solve them and enjoy reading them. It is midway through the show. It's halftime.
And now, your halftime entertainment.
All right, speaking of North Carolina, so Yelp for National Sandwich Month.
Okay.
Is going around looking at Yelp reviews in each state for the best sandwich shop in each state.
Okay.
Well, the best sandwich shop in the state of North Carolina, again, based on Yelp reviews, High Test Deli and Sweet Shop out in Bryson City.
All right. I'll back that.
Okay. I haven't been there, but sure, I'll take their word for it. According to a list, again, compiled by Yelp for National Sandwich Month, and apparently they have great Philly cheesesteaks, Italian subs, and Cuban sandwiches.
So I've actually been saying this. I think there is a new sandwich place going up in Raleigh. Okay. Somebody else did a feature. Oh, Our State Magazine, which I get. They did a thing in their most recent episode issue that was all about delis.
Okay.
And I don't know if they mentioned any in the Triangle, but they definitely didn't mention it in Raleigh, because I think that Raleigh, the capital of North Carolina, has a dearth of delis.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, there is a deli dearth. Not enough good sandwiches. A good sandwich place is tough because you got to balance. You've got to have some signature things that people like go to. And like, oh, have you had the Dennis Cox burger or whatever, the Dennis Cox deli sandwich or whatever?
You should have that.
You know, the monster, the whatever. Like, you got to have. But you need to also be able to just create anything. Like, right? I know most places will say you can't create your own, but you get the feeling of like, if I don't order off the menu, it's not going to be good. Or other places, it's like, I'm going to have to create my own sandwich when I want to do it for me. There is not a perfect sandwich place in Raleigh, North Carolina, or at least not enough good ones. Now, there's probably somebody operating a sandwich shop that's like, what about me? Well, I don't know. You need to advertise better.
Tweet at us. I will go eat sandwiches at your place.
There used to be one in Raleigh called like Boondini's or something that a lot of people talked about that was in North Raleigh, but that closed down recently. And
Union Special's got a couple locations in Raleigh. Yeah, I
like Union Special, but they're another. I feel like they fit the example. It doesn't feel like a straight up deli, right? Yeah. It doesn't feel like you can go in and be like, give me that bread, those two meats, those two cheese. They might offer it, but just doesn't have that vibe to it, right?
For sure.
But yes, I've had a Union Special sandwich. They are delicious.
Another place that I've really liked, they decided to close up shop, was the Night Kitchen.
Yes, yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Night Kitchen was great. They had a chicken, like a smoked paprika smoked chicken sandwich.
I remember that place.
Delightful.
I hear good things about Mookie's and Cary, but
I have not been to Mookie's.
I've been there once and it was good. We got whatever the specialty. I think we got a pastrami or something.
Okay,
But I don't know. I just that's the other part about a deli is you need a lot of them so that like every neighborhood can have one, right? So there probably are one or two good ones that they're, but like every 5 miles we need a decent deli.
Yeah, I was actually looking.
There's not enough.
Speaking of Cuban sandwiches, which apparently High Test Deli is known for. There is a place to really get, as far as I know, to get a great Cuban sandwich here in Raleigh.
I think there might be. There's a new.
Tweet me your sandwich shots.
Your sandwich
at
spots.
The fan race.
I did this on Twitter 5 years ago. I was like, tweet at me and we'll use this as the list of best sandwich spots. And it was still underwhelming. There's a new Johnston County food hall.
Yeah.
And I believe there is a Cuban place in there.
Oh, okay.
Now, sometimes you get a Cuban place and a Cuban sandwich is one of the things they do. Or you get a sandwich place. And a Cuban sandwich is one of the things they do. So, I don't know. But I think this is a Cuban place. Check it out.
So, they're doing a remake or a reimagining of Roadhouse. I know.
No. I'm not on board.
J. Jake Gyllenhaal is going to star in it. It's also going to feature Conor McGregor.
I'm not on board with this.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
You can't redo Swayze.
I'm trying to think what the best remake that actually exists out there. Like, people say 21 Jump Street was a good movie. Now, and that wasn't a remake of a movie.
It was
movie.
A TV was, show.
Yeah, yeah. It was much inspired like by the TV show. Sometimes it's like that where you, I don't know. This feels like, because here's the thing. Excuse me. I'm getting a little choked up. People are going to get mad at me, but they got to understand where I'm coming from. Roadhouse is not a good movie. Like, nobody when they first saw Roadhouse was like, excellent,
give
compelling script, great character development. Like, you're watching it almost as in the way you would watch a comedy, right? Like, it's for the humor of the thing. Mm. Like, I don't know if we could call it a cult classic. Like, it was made a cult classic by whatever the monstrosity of cable TV became. Like, whatever, we need a term for movies that only became popular because they got played on, I think it's now country music TV, but, you know, it used to be like TNT, those random stations that just, they survive
Comet.
On movies that they know they'll just, they just cast it out like a net, and they're like, you know what? One out of every 10 people that cruises through here is going to be like, oh, Roadhouse is on, I'll watch a little bit of that, yeah. You know what the greatest Roadhouse story of all time is, right?
No, I don't.
Who's the lead female in Roadhouse?
I can't remember.
But whoever her husband is, Bill Murray and some of his friends like to call him anytime they see Roadhouse on, and they're like, hey, man, Swayze's giving it to your wife right now. Like, Swayze is all Kelly Lynch. She's told this story. Whoever her husband is, like, Bill Murray can be in Japan, and Roadhouse comes on, and he's calling back in America, and it's 3 in the morning. He's like, hey, man, just had to let you know, Swayze has got your wife on the rocks right now. Like, Swayze is on the beach with your wife in Roadhouse, and he is giving it to her, buddy. That's just it. That's the best ongoing story about Roadhouse. But my point is, don't get mad, Roadhouse fans, but Roadhouse, it wasn't meant to be a good movie. It was, like, meant to be an 80s movie. Kind of cheesy, over the top. Swayze going full earnest in his role. And so, like, to remake that is, like, you can't remake. It'd be like trying to remake the song. They use it on this show. Friday, gotta get.
Okay,
be like, no, not that one. Not the last Friday night. The Friday that only went viral because it was bad.
Oh, yeah.
Friday, gotta get down on Friday. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, talking
you can't about. Remake that song because the only reason we like that song is because it was bad, right? That's kind of what's happening with Roadhouse. You can't remake Roadhouse. It just doesn't work. I don't know. I don't know if I explained that well, but I promise you I'm right. You don't do it.
I accept what you said. Real quick, for all you Apple phone users out there, iOS 15.6 is available.
Team Android.
This is coming from a guy who has a massive Mac computer.
I don't care if I'm not in your group text. I don't care if I show. What am I, green in your group
green.
Text? Don't care. Team Android. Better phone, less money. Google owns me, not Apple. I am owned, but not by the same company you are. I'm owned by a different company. Team Google. Team Android. Get out of here with your iOS.
Slam Ball's making a comeback, Hayes Bermar.
This is all I wanted to talk
about. We
got to
wait until summer 2023. But Slam Ball is coming back. For those who do not know Slam Ball, first of all, get on YouTube, especially if you're a Google, someone owned by Google like Hayes Bermar. Get on YouTube and just look up Slam Ball. It's NFL Blitz meets basketball. It's wonderful.
The highlights are amazing. It was one of those ones. It used to show up on whatever country music television or TNT or what's
I was Spike, I thought.
Spike, yes, yes, Spike. You used to have it. It's definitely one where, like, I never sat down and was like, I'm going to watch some Slam Ball now. But as you were flipping channels, because back then you still had to, like, flip channels.
Yep.
Like, when you hit on it, you're like, well, I got to watch for a couple minutes. I'm going to have to see if somebody dunks on somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, and you also felt like Slam Ball could have been marketed better.
Oh, like, easily.
I don't know how Vince McMahon and company didn't get, like, in on Slam Ball, right?
Yeah.
Like, it should be all about their, you know, their introductions. It, like, it's got a little feel of roller derby to it, you know?
Yeah.
And roller derby has a little bit of, like, wrestling feel to it, right?
Sure.
So, like, yes, you could definitely – you could have somebody – you could have crossover between Slam Ball and Monday Night Raw. Like, why not? If some dude's dunking on dudes in Slam Ball, bring them on over to Monday Night Raw and see how he can hold up. Slam Ball, fantastic. It needs a bigger billing. But it is tough because, again, I'm not sitting down and watching a full Slam Ball game. And so I don't know if Slam Ball fits in a world where people have to, like, intentionally choose to stream it versus – well, I'm clicking through, click, click. Oh, my gosh, that guy jumping on a trampoline to dunk. I'll watch this for 90 seconds. Then when it hits commercial, you're like, click, I'm going back to Roadhouse on the other channel.
Yes, the remake of Roadhouse.
Yes.
But if, for, again, those who don't know, it's they have these large trampolines with the basketball hoops, but you can knock dudes over like it's football.
That's the other thing is there seem to be no actual basketball rules. Like one dude would be dribbling, but then when he needs to get up some speed, like, you know what? I'm just tucking it, and he's just running and then jumping onto the tramp and going. So, like, I don't know which basketball rules we actually apply. But, like, yes, dudes could hit each other. And then – but ultimately, you're trying to set up for the big event is two people launching, one trying to dunk, and one trying to block him.
Yeah.
Which, interestingly, I was trying to sell people on how volleyball is actually, like, a great spectator sport. And
it really is.
We should grow a women's volleyball league. We should have spent more resources growing a women's volleyball league than we did growing a women's basketball league just because it was basketball and it was the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think a women's volleyball league would have gained more traction and been more successful. Because, like, every play ends with two people jumping at a ball, one person trying to spike it down on the other, and one person trying to block it, the same as slam ball. So I think women's volleyball could be a great sport.
Yeah.
It could be a great professional league is what I mean.
Slam ball. It's gonna be great on TikTok and Instagram.
Give me all
that's where it's
all
gonna
the slam ball
because
slam ball.
I can just watch in like little like 15-second nuggets. Like that dude just got stuffed or just got dunked on or whatever it may be. It's gonna be wonderful.
Yes.
All right, that's it.
Let's play some bets.
Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death. Okay, you can own me. I owe you one.
Let's start with an update from the Wyndham Championship, because I'll be placing some of my bets there. John, is your leader at 9-under? I asked a friend of mine who gambles on golf more than I do exactly how to pronounce his name. I was like, is that John Hugh? He goes, no, it's John Ha. John Ha, H-U-H. Shot a 9-under. Not quite Brant Snedeker's 59 from a few years ago at Sedgefield, birthplace of the ACC. But your leaders are John Ha and a lot of people I don't know. JT Poston is tied for 6. That's the first name I recognize on the board. We need to get some bigger names up there on the board. I believe I saw Brendan Todd from Raleigh at 2-under. It's probably one of the guys Gold's watching. But I'm going to go ahead and place my first bet. I know you're going to call me out on this, that I'm not placing the bet till now, even though the Wyndham has already started. Because it's not like I'm taking the leader. I'm betting with the heart. Let's go 35-1, Harold Varner III. That's my first bet today. Harold Varner III, 35-1 to win the Wyndham Championship. And I believe he's already in the clubhouse today at 1-over. So it's not like I'm taking somebody who's good. I mean he's good.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm not trying to cheat and take the guys leading the tournament one quarter of the way through.
No,
give me Harold Varner.
Okay.
What you got?
No, that's fine. I'm actually going to jump to tomorrow. EPL gets started. I'm going to take Liverpool versus Fulham. Liverpool -2.5 goals, +185.
Wait, the EPL starts this weekend?
Starts tomorrow.
Oh,
I think it actually might start today.
Harold Varner's only +1 through +6, too, so he's got time to turn it around. Let me keep it in that camp. One guy who is +1, and he's done for the day, Webb Simpson. He's 18-1 favorite to win the thing, or 18-1 odds to win it.
Okay.
Not a favorite. I got him for a unit. Webb Simpson, 18-1. I got a unit of 100 fake units. I got 100 on Webb Simpson, 18-1.
Okay. I'm going to go to Giants-Dodgers this afternoon. Mookie Betts hits a homer, +400.
Interesting. Well, since I'm probably not going to make any money off Harold Varner III or Webb Simpson, let's go to where my bread is buttered, baby. Mm-hmm. NFL. Hall of Fame game. Not to be missed. the Jaguars, the Raiders going head-to-head. Who will win? Should be tight. Give me the Jaguars plus one. They're playing for pride. Doug Peterson wants to come out and prove that the stink of Urban Meyer is off them and that they are a team of winners. Give me the Jags plus one in the Hall of Fame game.
Okay. I got the Jaguars winning that game at a plus 110.
Well, we can't both have them winning.
Yeah, too late.
You're going money line?
No. I'm going money line.
Nope. Dennis is taking the Raiders.
I'm changing it
and forcing him to take the Raiders.
For radio
purposes.
Nope.
We can't both be taking the Jags.
I've already had it.
All right, you got the Raiders. When the Raiders lose tonight, I'm going to send you a taunting tweet.
No, you're
and
not.
Talk about how I'm going to belittle you on the show for not being smart enough. The Jags, I like what the Jags have going on in the preseason. I love everything about what I've read about their third-string quarterback competition.
Sure.
And that's going to be what puts them over the top.
My final bet here, 10 seconds left, two-pick parlay. Give me the Chrome over the Chaos, Atlas over the Water Dogs, and the PLL on Saturday, plus 175.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Finding the perfect suit can seem impossible, but finding one that's perfect for you is easy with Indochino. Choose your design and custom details. Then submit your measurements online or get measured in-store for a custom made-for-you fit at an incredible price. And shop their new fall collection for seasonal styles. Find your perfect suit with Indochino. Get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more with promo code FALLUPDATE at Indochino.com. That's Indochino.com, promo code FALLUPDATE.